Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, May 9th, 2025. We'll start today's reading on the front page with the Catholic Church, first American Pope elected. I would say first North American Pope elected. Robert Prevost is a Chicago native, spent career ministering in Peru. Vatican City. White smoke poured from the chimney of the Sistine Chapel, and the great bells of St. Peter's Basilica tolled Thursday after cardinals elected the 267th Pope to lead the Catholic Church on the second day of their conclave. Cardinal Robert Prevost, a missionary who spent his career ministering in Peru and leads the Vatican's powerful office of bishops, was elected the first North American Pope in the 2,000-year history of the Catholic Church. Prevost, 69, took the name Leo XIV. The crowd at St. Peter's Square erupted in cheers. Priests made the sign of the cross, and nuns wept as the crowd shouted, "Viva il Papa!" after the white smoke wafted into the late afternoon sky at 6:07 p.m. Waving flags from around the world, tens of thousands of people waited to learn who won. In the crowd at St. Peter's Square, Pedro Deggett, 22, a finance student from Argentina, said he and his family visited Rome during the Argentine Pope's pontificate and hoped for a new pope in Francis's image. Francis did well in opening the church to the outside world, but on other fronts maybe he didn't do enough. We'll see if the next one will be able to do more, Deggett said from the piazza. The Reverend Jan Dominic Bogotage, a Slovene Franciscan friar, was more critical of Francis. He said if he were in the Sistine Chapel, he'd be voting for Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, who is on many papal contender lists. He has clear ideas, not much ideology. He's direct, intelligent, and respectful man, Bogotage said from the square. Most of all, he's agile. A long wait on the first ballot. On Wednesday night, the black smoke of the first ballot poured out of the chapel chimney about 9 p.m., about 4.5 hours after the cardinals filed into the Sistine Chapel to take their oaths at the start of the conclave. The late hour prompted speculation about what took so long. Did they have to redo the vote? Did someone get sick or need translation help? Did the papal preacher take a long time to deliver his meditation before the voting began? They probably need more time, said Costanza Rinaldi, a 63-year-old who traveled from Pescara in Italy's Abruzzo region to the Vatican. For much of the past century, the conclave needed between 3 and 14 ballots to find a pope. Excuse me. John Paul I, the Pope, who reigned for 33 days in 1978, was elected on the fourth ballot. His successor, John Paul II, needed 8. Francis was elected on the fifth in 2013. Conjectures and contenders. The cardinals opened the secretive, centuries-old ritual Wednesday afternoon. Bright red cassocks, Swiss guards standing at attention, ancient Latin chants and oaths preceded the slamming shut of the Sistine Chapel doors to seal the cardinals off from the outside world. Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the 70-year-old Secretary of State under Francis and a leading contender to succeed him as Pope, assumed leadership of the proceedings as the most senior cardinal under the age 80 eligible to participate. Parolin seemed to have received the blessings from none other than Re, the respected elder among the cardinals. During the traditional exchange of peace during the pre-conclave mass on Wednesday, Ree was caught on hot mic telling Parolin auguri doppio, or double best wishes. Italians debated whether it was just a customary gesture acknowledging Parolin's role running conclave, or if it might have been an informal endorsement, or even a premature congratulations. The voting process. The voting follows a strict choreography dictated by church law. Each cardinal writes his choice on a piece of paper inscribed with the words, Elegio in summen pontificum, I elect a supreme pontiff. They approach the altar one by one and say, I call as my witness Christ the Lord, who will be my judge, that my vote is given to the one who, before God, I think should be elected. The folded ballot is placed on a round plate and tipped into a silver-gold urn. Once cast, the ballots are opened one by one by three different scrutineers, cardinals selected at random, who write down the names and read them aloud. The scrutineers, whose work is checked by other cardinals, call revisers, then add up the results of each round of balloting and write them on a separate sheet of paper, which is preserved in the papal archives. As the scrutineer reads out each name, he pierces each ballot with a needle through the word Elegio. All the ballots are then bound together with a thread, and the bundle is put aside and burned in the chapel stove along with a chemical to produce the smoke. And the photos here on page A4 show people, thousands of people, watching as white smoke billows from a chimney of the Sistine Chapel on Thursday at the Vatican. I mean, the photo is just packed with people. And the other smaller photo is showing a close-up of about 20 people. People reacting Thursday as white smoke billows from the chimney of the Sistine Chapel at the Vatican. And the large front page photo shows newly elected Pope Leo XIV appearing Thursday on the balcony of St. Peter's Basilica at the Vatican. And the new Pope Leo is flanked by two cardinals. He has a smile on his face. And then the smaller photo on the front page shows the chimney with white smoke billowing from the chimney of the Sistine Chapel on Thursday during the conclave to elect a new pope at the Vatican. Also on the front page, Decatur schools. This is local news here. New school board seated. The four newest members of the Decatur Public School Board of Education consider filling teacher vacancies a top priority. Kevin Hale, Devin Joyner, Karen Lauritsen, and Christina Tias took the oath of office from Superintendent Rochelle Clark at the reorganization meeting held on Wednesday. Newly elected officers for the next 2 years are President Bill Clevenger and Vice President Will Wetzel, with Melissa Bradford, Clark's secretary, serving as board secretary, and the district's chief operational officer, Mike Curry, serving as treasurer. My first priority is getting teachers in classrooms, Lauritsen said, as Hale and Tias both nodded in agreement. That's the most important thing right now in the midst of a teacher shortage that is impacting students all over the district, and teachers in the district as well at an alarming rate. I'm glad the district is making strides to recruit new teachers, but I also think that we need to do a lot to retrain teachers we already have and to recruit teachers, not only from Macon County, but all of Illinois. We can't get reading levels and math levels up if we don't have teachers, Tias said, and the superintendent is retiring in June 2026. So looking to fill that position and doing a smooth transition would be the next step. It's not only important to get teachers in front of students, Hale said, but to make all district employees feel respected and critical. The role of teaching assistants, for example, is often overlooked. They show up and help us teach the kids, said Hale, a teacher at Johns Hill Magnet School, who plans to retire at the end of the school year. The community understands how important they are. Another priority for him is financial stability, Hale said, and if cuts have to be made, he wants to ensure that the cuts are to excess and waste, not to classrooms. We have to guard the tax dollars of our constituents, he said. We have to make this a district that competes with Bloomington, Champaign, Springfield, and surrounding communities for teachers. For Joyner, community accountability is important. What we're doing won't mean anything if the community doesn't work with us, Joyner said. Boots on the ground is getting the folks out there to get involved in what we're doing. We can't make decisions if the people don't know what they want. Joyner spends a lot of time in schools now, though his work with Old King's Orchard Community Center, through his work with Old King's Orchard Community Center and listening, he said, is a main way to find out what is needed, starting with the kids, who are the ones most affected by the decisions on education, asking them what is lacking and what they need. The building from there is important to him, while recruiting students' families and the community to get more involved. It's not the lack of resources, he said, it's the lack of agreement. We have to figure that out. The race for school featured six candidates, only one of which, Jason Dion, was an incumbent. Board members Alana Banks, Kevin Collins, and Al Scheider did not seek re-election. It marked a third straight election to see no incumbents return to the board. 4 years ago, all four incumbents are then seated on the board declined to run for second terms, and in the last election in 2023, three new board members were elected, though Clevenger had been appointed to fill the vacant seat left when former board president Dan Oakes retired before his term was complete. Clevenger then ran for and won the seat he holds now, while the two sitting board members in that election cycle, Andrew Taylor and Regan Lewis, also decided against running for re-election. The new board faces a busy couple of years. In addition to finding a new superintendent, the roadmap 2030 strategic plan, which includes possible reconfiguration of district programs and facilities, is still in development. The new board members' first regular meeting will be at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, May 13th, and will be held at Hope Academy. The Keele Administration Building will be closed from May 12th through the 23rd for replacement of the boiler. And the photo here on page A4 shows the newly seated Decatur School Board members from left in the picture, Kevin Hale, Devin Joyner, Christina Tias, and Karen Lawrenson, take the oath of office Wednesday, May 7th, administered by Superintendent Rochelle Clark. Also on the front page, community. Students catch family time at Dreamland Lake. American Dreamer STEM Academy third grader Isaiah Selvey brought his dad for an evening of fishing at Dreamland Lake and Fairview Park. The family, as well as other students from the school and Stephen Decatur Middle School, were invited to try the sport during a special event. I wanted to fish, Isaiah said about his first fishing. Irving Selvey wanted to attend the event as well, so his son could have the same experience he had as a child. I fished with my dad, he said. Getting outside was important to the duo. According to the family, Isaiah spends much of his spare time playing Pokemon games. I have 96 Pokemon cards, he said. Kindergartners through eighth graders, along with their families from the two schools, were invited not only to fish, but to eat fish prepared by staff. It's open to all of our families, said Megan Mayrick, family liaison for American Dreamer. That includes siblings or whoever they want to bring. After the families caught the fish were released back into the pond. The event was sponsored by the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Elia Perez is a caseworker at Stephen Decatur and is also employed by IDNR. I teach people about fishing and the outdoors and ecology, he said. It's basically about sustainability. We want them to leave the Xboxes and go fishing. A trailer filled with fishing equipment is brought to the ponds ready to supply the wannabe fishermen, so families literally show up, Mayrick said. They can borrow a pole, and he has the bait. Perez gives instructions to others who may not know the basics of fishing. A fish fry helped feed the families on Wednesday night. Another fishing trip to Allerton Park with 4-H members helped provide fish for the meal. Bringing together the various groups, including 4-H and inner-city kids, is important to Perez. They don't know anything about it, he said about the fishing experience. 7-year-old Kamila Kofer was not one of those students. The fish is fun to catch, she said. Kamila brought her mom, Alicia Kofer, and three younger siblings to the event. They go a lot in the summer with their grandparents, Alicia Kofer said. It's good to get them outside so that they're not always on their phone or their iPad or watching TV. Sixth grader Carson Hibbard brought his own pole, along with family friend Xavier Hernandez, 19, as a guest. "I go about 20 times a year," Carson said. "I like fishing." The pair brought their own tackle box, along with advice for those who were new to fishing. "Make sure you got the worm on right," Hernandez said, "or else it's going to go flying." Perez plans more fishing excursions during the summer. Preparing and cooking the fish is on the list of lessons. "Just give it a try," he said. "The more you do it, the better you're going to get." And the photos, all here on page A4, show Illinois Department of Natural Resources Outreach Coordinator Van Grissom handing out bait to students attending the urban fishing program at Dreamland Lake in Decatur's Fairview Park on Wednesday, May 7th. And he's standing there with a cup full of bait, and several young people are standing behind him holding their fishing poles, waiting to get their bait for their hook. And then another larger picture shows Irving Selvey helping his son Isaiah Selvey, a third grader at American Dreamer STEM Academy, fish for the first time with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources Urban Fishing and Community Outreach Program at Dreamland Lake in Decatur's Fairview Park on Wednesday, May 7th. And Irving Selvey has his arms around his son's, helping him hold the pole. And there's another man standing behind with a Mickey Mouse sweatshirt on, and looks like everyone's having a good time. And a smaller photo here shows third grader Asher Powell preparing his rod during the urban fishing event with local schools and the Illinois Department of Natural Resources Community Outreach Program. And he's looking up at his pole, and then there are several people in the background at Fairview Park. In more local and state news on page A2, $77 million in federal education funds regained. This is from Capital News, Illinois. A federal judge in New York issued a preliminary order Tuesday, blocking the Trump administration from cutting off states' access to hundreds of millions of dollars in pandemic relief funds for public schools, including more than $77 million for Illinois. U.S. District Judge Eduardo Ramos of the Southern District of New York issued a preliminary injunction blocking enforcement of an order that Education Secretary Linda McMahon issued on Friday, March 28th. That order reversed earlier decisions to grant the states additional time to spend funds they had been allocated. The effect of McMahon's order was to immediately cut off access to funds that states said they had already committed to spend, but had not yet made the actual expenditures. Attorney General Kwame Raoul joined a coalition of 17 states in suing the federal government to block McMahon's order. The Trump administration's short-sighted and illegal decision to attempt to rescind already appropriated education funding would hurt vulnerable students the most and could wreak havoc on the budgets of school districts throughout Illinois and the nation, Raoul said in a statement Tuesday. The lawsuit over pandemic-related education money is one of more than a dozen multi-state suits Raoul has joined in combination with other Democratic states' attorneys general, challenging actions Trump has taken since being sworn in for a second term January 20th. In 2020 and 2021, Congress passed several relief and economic stimulus packages totaling trillions of dollars to help individuals, businesses, and state and local governments deal with the financial consequences of the pandemic. For schools, that included costs associated with preparing for the safe return to in-person learning, addressing the learning loss students suffered during the extended period of school's closures, and addressing some of the unique needs of homeless children that were exacerbated by the pandemic. According to the complaint, Illinois was awarded just over $5 billion in education stabilization funds under the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, which was enacted in March 2021. Of that, $77.2 million remained obligated but not yet spent at the end of March 2025. Those funds had been earmarked for such things as teacher mentoring, statewide instructional coaching, new principal mentoring, trauma response initiatives, and the creation of social-emotional learning hubs and contracts for technology infrastructure upgrades, according to the complaint. Under ARPA, those funds were intended to cover expenses incurred through September 30, 2023. Subsequent legislation gave states an additional year to September 30, 2024 to obligate their funds. And under agency regulations, they had another 120 days beyond that to draw down the funds, although they were also given the option of requesting further extensions. In January 2025, Illinois requested and later received permission to extend its deadline for drawing down the remainder of its funds to March 28, 2026. Other states involved in the lawsuit also received extensions. But on Friday, March 28, 2025, the Department of Education issued a memo rescinding those extensions, effectively cutting off the state's access to any unspent funds. Extending deadlines for COVID-related grants, which are in fact taxpayer funds years after the COVID pandemic ended, is not consistent with the department's priorities and thus not a worthwhile exercise of its discretion, McMahon said in a memo to state education agency heads. The injunction means the Department of Education cannot enforce the order, at least while this case is still being litigated or until the court issues a different order. And accompanying this story is a picture of Illinois attorney Kwame Raoul from a file photo. He was part of a lawsuit securing temporary injunction to stop the Trump administration from cutting off more than $77 million in education funds to the state. Opus 24 to sing in Mother's Day. Decatur Choral Society's Opus 24, excuse me, will host its spring concert, Abide, at 3 p.m. Sunday, May 11th, at Central Christian Church, 650 West William Street in Decatur. The community chorale group, under the direction of conductor Ted Hess, will perform a selection of music dedicated to mothers and mother figures. Tickets can be purchased at the door for $15 for adults and $10 for full-time students. Decatur Chorale Society and Opus 24 promote choral music in, I've been saying chorale, it's choral, music in Central Illinois. The group also provides scholarships to area high school students to receive private voice lessons at Millikan University. For updates on DCS, visit the organization's Facebook page or website. Police facial ID app cracks identity theft case. Jose Luis Badillo Sanchez is accused of stealing a Decatur man's identity and then setting off to work for 5 years pretending to be him and also running up a $13,000 hospital bill in his name. Police say that the 33-year-old defendant's life as someone else began to unravel when the victim, age 30, found out what was going on. He stated he had tax statements from 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, and 2022 that showed someone using his identity had worked at six different companies during those years, said a sworn affidavit. The victim also showed police a bill in his name from HSHS St. Mary's Hospital dated from March of 2024. It involved an overnight stay, and the total amount owing was $13,000, knocked down by $4,550 because the hospital said the patient was uninsured. Detective Cody Rose, who signed an arrest warrant, said police launched intensive efforts to track down the man behind the identity theft. Officers obtained ID cards and social security cards the defendant had used at one firm doing maintenance work for major Decatur industrial companies. Detectives observed the copy of the Social Security card to have the same Social Security number as the victim's Social Security card, said Rose. However, the name on the card was not centered and did not contain the victim's middle name. Rose said two Illinois ID cards did not check out as being genuine. Police had already some information on Badillo Sanchez, as a records check showed that he'd been pulled over for a traffic stop in 2018. At that time, he had told police he didn't speak English, and a passenger who translated from Spanish told officers he went by the victim's name. Despite having a Mexican ID card in his wallet that listed his actual name, the driver relayed that he was the victim, the victim, and that his cousin was Jose, Rose said. Police also discovered a Macon County jail booking photo of Badillo Sanchez from 2012 and contrasted that with a company access badge the defendant had been issued at one of the Decatur firms where he worked. The picture from the access badge was compared to the 2012 Macon County jail booking photo of Jose Badillo Sanchez using a facial recognition program, said Rose. The results showed a 99.9% match. Police list no motive for the alleged crime, and Badillo Sanchez pleaded not guilty to two counts of identity theft during a preliminary hearing April 30th in Macon County Circuit Court. Judge Lindsay Shelton found probable cause to try him after a drawn-out hearing that was slowed down to allow a translator working by speakerphone to relay the proceedings in Spanish. Chief Public Defender Michelle Sanders, cross-examining Detective Rose, asked, "Did Mr. Badillo Sanchez have an interpreter when he spoke with you?" Rose said a bilingual officer had provided a translation and, in response to another defense question, said interviews with the police had been recorded. Badillo Sanchez was granted pretrial release and let out of jail May 2nd. He is due back in court for pretrial hearing on June 27th. He'll also have a pretrial hearing that day on an unrelated charge, which he denies, accusing him of causing criminal damage to a gambling machine by striking it. Man arrested on murder charge. Brett A. Ballard II is defending himself in court on charges he's a gang member who took part in the ruthless street execution of a wounded Decatur man who police say was fatally shot dead as he staggered across a parking lot. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said witnesses watched as Israel B. Lewis was initially attacked while seated in his car around noon on January 28th in the 500 block of South Church Street. The victim was then seen crawling free of his vehicle while a gunman changed his position so he could continue firing until Israel fell to the pavement, according to Detective Anna Oldham, who signed the affidavit. Ballard, 27, is described as the one of three known Eastside street gang members who took part in the shooting. One witness had described one of the suspects casually videoing the murder on their cell phone before all three drove away in a van. Ballard appeared on April 30th in Macon County Circuit Court, pleading not guilty to murder at a preliminary hearing that found probable cause to try him. Testifying in court, Oldham said police had reconstructed the crime through witness statements, surveillance camera evidence, and cell phone records that traced the movements of the suspects. The detective also said weapons and ammunition matching the 16-shell casing left at the murder scene were later found at a house in the 2500 block of East North Street. The residence was described as a known address associated with the East Side gang and shooting investigations. A co-defendant, Dana Ebon Jr., 32, is also pleading not guilty to murder, and his case is scheduled for a hearing on DNA evidence Thursday. He also has been denied pre-trial release. The third defendant involved in the case is a 16-year-old boy who faces murder charges but cannot be identified for legal reasons. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, May 9th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.